Welcome back to the sound blaze of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Of all the podcasts in all the internet and all the world, you had to tune into this one. Well, buy me a coffee. If you don't, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon, and for the rest of your life. Here's listening for you, kid.
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require funds. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy Rick Blaine a coffee via the coffee.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material needs. Special thanks go to our first coffee angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha. And thank you truly for listening.
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater.
This is episode 16. Warning, this episode depicts graphic violence. It is not for children.
This is Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Chapter 15. The marshal's deputy carried out his regular midday inspection of the dungeon, his eyes flicking casually to the windows of each closed cell door. Calron, eager for company, hid himself just out of the light and watched, wondering if the deputy's daughter might be in tow. Fickle and confusing as she may be, she was the only respite he had from the infinite boredom and uneasy wait for death. Two, she provided the faint glimmer of hope toward a possible escape from the marshal's cruel justice, though just how she would allow herself to be used, he did not know. Yet. Relaxed and easy, the deputy finished his rounds and headed back upstairs. Calron waited, not moving from the shadows. He was rewarded for his patience. A pair of hands gripped the window bars tentatively as the fair-haired girl on tiptoe peered in. Her eyes sparkled impishly, a strand of her hair tucked between her lips.
Are you awake?
Yes.
He remained in shadow, wondering what was on her mind.
Come here.
Why?
Come here. I want you to look at me.
Soliciting a compliment now. Women always want you to tell them how pretty they are.
He responded dutifully, and as he had guessed, she stepped back and displayed her pale yellow dress for him, playing its folds with her fingers.
What do you think of it?
Inwardly impressed with her clothing, obviously a morning worship dress, he decided to spin the game back around to his own rules.
What a pretty little girl.
I am not a little girl.
Little girls run away from me. Only grown-up ladies can be my friends.
This gave her pause as she released the skirt of her dress and blinked at the door. Calron stepped away, wanting to see just how far she would reach to get him back. She was at the window again in just a few heartbeats.
I'll be your friend if you'll be mine.
He narrowed his eyes at her.
A friend would try to help me, Delcy.
Her mild shock at his use of her name offered another advantage. Obviously, she did not remember the only time Calron heard it spoken.
How do you know my name?
I'm a mage, remember?
She glanced at his wrists.
But I thought the chain...
There are some things I can still do. But nothing that you need worry about, especially if you're going to be my friend.
He brought his hands up to the window, just without reach of her fingers, still grasping the bars.
Temptation is a powerful tool when used carefully.
You do want to be my friend, don't you?
She gazed innocently into his eyes, her lips twitching in hope.
Yes.
Of course, true friends prove it to each other, don't they?
He rolled his eyes in a wondering manner.
Now, how can we do that?
I could get you something you like something good to eat.
She rose on her toes again.
But what could I do to trade? I have nothing in here.
Talk to me, of course. Tell me some mage secrets.
Nodding appreciably, he scratched at his short beard and moved back from the window.
A good thought. But mage secrets wouldn't do you much good if I couldn't show you how to use them.
Oh.
I know.
He moved close again, this time covering her fingers with his. She did not flinch at his touch, all her attention on his face.
I could give you one of my magic stones I stole. Except, they're outside under a hiding spell, and I'm stuck in here.
Now's the time to minimize my predicament, to guide her towards seeing the simplicity of her advantage.
But if you could, you'd give me one.
Of course. I'd show them all to you, and let you have your pick.
Would they work for me?
If I showed you, but...
Increase the value of that which you have to offer.
You couldn't tell anyone else about it, or they'd take them away from you and use it for themselves.
I'd never show it to anyone. 'Twould be our secret.
Delcy, are you hiding down here again?
Yes, Father, I'm coming.
With a last conspiratorial glance at Calron, she ran for the stairs, leaving the mage to speculate on just how far she was willing to go to get a magic stone that was nothing more than a figment of their conversations. In a couple more days, however, his little game with her would be ended, outcome or no. The magistrate was due in town for a round of trials, sentences, and, in his case, a painful execution. Rubbing away some of the fatigue creeping up on him, the marshal's deputy on night watch stood up from the chair, moved around the desk, and peered out the window at the quiet Hopetown street stretching away before him, its furthest reaches disappearing into the darkness. Small wavering pools of light afforded vague illumination along the way, an autumn breeze bending the flames of the oil lamps atop posts marching down each lane. Guessing from the time that his associate deputy was once again overdue from patrolling the rougher portion of town where the Daggletails wandered, he grabbed for his cloak and sword belt and headed out to the streets. Though Marshal Garnett made a policy of never leaving the royal post unoccupied, no matter the time of day or night, rarely were a deputy's services required for anything more than the usual nighttime complaints and occasional disruptions around the taverns. With this in mind, the deputy placed aside any concerns about remaining at his place or locking up the post building, and hoped his associate had not gotten himself into serious trouble. If he had happened to look behind him shortly after he started out, he might have seen a small, furtive figure slipping silently through the door he had just latched, and would have returned to see who had come calling. As it was, however, no one was around to witness young Delcy so far away from the bed where her parents thought she was sleeping. Calron was roused from slumber. Rolling over in his place on the floor, he had forsaken the straw mat, having never liked anything but the hardest of beds. He opened a foggy eye at Delcy's silhouette in the barred window.
Wake up!
Guessing it must be well past midnight, he shook himself awake and went to the door.
Isn't it late for little girls?
Oh. He stopped to correct himself, covering his error by rubbing his face. He could not afford to alienate her now.
Isn't it a little late for you to be out of bed? How did you get down here?
He noted the heavy shawl over her shoulders that gave her a bulkier appearance. She looked older.
I thought they kept the upper door locked.
Sometimes not.
She looked at her feet and twisted her hips rhythmically back and forth to keep from grinning.
It depends on who's the night patrol, and they aren't always in the post upstairs.
So, there's no one on duty at the moment. Such stealth on her part means she has something in mind.
This amount of cleverness from a child her age was unusual, and he wondered if her father knew just how precocious was his own offspring.
If not, 'twould account for her unsupervised visits into the dungeon.
He remembered the harshness of her father's voice when he had called for her last. Of course, if a child capable of the wayward independence she demonstrated was punished for same, they were sometimes wont to defy the authority of their parents.
By the same token, do I dare hope?
For what have you come, Delcy?
Did you mean it when you said you'd give me a magic stone?
You have my word.
Will it work for me?
If I show you.
He tried not to smile as she bunched her forehead in a youthful scowl.
What about your chains? Father says only a mage can take those off.
He speaks truth.
And how could you show me?
The chains wouldn't affect my showing you.
What if you're lying?
He held up his wrists in supplication.
I can do nothing whilst these chains bind me. If I was lying, you could easily have me captured again.
Though outwardly he beseeched her with a veneer of honesty, in his heart he hated this girl, this child, for possessing power over him. Half-shadowed by the lamplight, Delcy stood silent for a moment, seriously considering everything that had been said, her thoughtful eyes observing him closely. Calron's perception of her developing independence was correct. Delcy's father had admonished her severely.
Delcy, what are you doing sneaking into the dungeon without permission, especially after just returning from the wedding? You have been irresponsible, possibly dirtying or damaging your pretty dress, which would not have been respectable to your grandmother, who made it especially. And why in the God's names do you still want to scurry about down there like a filthy mouse, hiding in corners and chasing shadows? You're more than 12 riads old now and need to stop playing and acting like a silly child and start accepting family responsibilities and helping your mother regularly with chores.
Wanting to emulate her deputy father, she had walked proudly beside him on his patrols for several riads, wishing she could carry a sword with the king's seal on the pommel, thereby gaining respect from the townsfolk. And empowered by her conversations with the imprisoned mage, Delcy chose to defy her father, believing her own judgment was sound and wanting to prove that she was responsible and capable. She would get this magic stone from the mage and, once she was shown how to use it, would return him to his cell without anyone the wiser. In a few days, the sorcerer would be long gone, executed by order of the royal magistrate, and nobody else would know of these stones. Then, Delcy would be the only possessor of a very special magic stone and be able to wish for anything she wanted. she would finally have her own sword and seal and, instead of laboring under her mother's fussy tutelage, be recognized as deputy under the marshal, just like her father. She would be a woman warrior and enforcer of the king's laws. She dropped her hands from beneath her shawl, revealing keys. Hefting the sizable ring that made her hands look even smaller than they were, she maneuvered the proper key into the lock and, with a frown of effort, gave it a turn. Hardly able to believe that this was the moment of his freedom, Calron allowed her to open the door for him as he blinked in amazement.
Certainly the fantasy of magic stones was not the key to this escape from the marshal.
Urging him out with a wave of her hand, he had paused to see if the floor was clear of anything that might hurt his bare feet. She pulled the door shut again and locked it perfunctorily, no doubt imitating her father's job habits. Turning around to face him finally, with no door between them, she smiled confidently.
Show me.
Fervently wishing he was also free of the damned disenchantment chains binding his wrists, he forced himself to allow for each liberty to come in its time. He nodded his head toward the upper door.
You'd better make sure it's clear. I'd hate for you to have to tell them why you were taking me out for a walk.
Nodding agreement, she padded ahead, holding the keys silent with both hands, and made her way up the short stair. Gingerly releasing one hand from the key ring, she pulled her long hair out of the way and pressed an ear to the heavy door, smiling victoriously when she heard no one outside. Eager to be out and away, Calron moved quickly up the steps, the stones cool under his toes. He was halted by her free hand touching his midriff, and he raised a questioning eyebrow.
Before we go outside, I want to seal our promise.
In what way?
He was getting impatient, but he needed her to continue being his scout until they were outside and away from immediate notice. She simpered sweetly, knowing he had to do as she asked.
Kiss me.
Kiss you?
He wanted to laugh at her presumptuousness, but reminded himself that she literally held the keys to his freedom.
I want to see what it's like to kiss a sorcerer.
As you wish.
Trying not to sound begrudging, he waited for her to do what he expected of someone her age, lift her chin and close her eyes. When she did so, he leaned over and pressed his closed mouth to hers, quelling the squirm of displeasure at the sensation of her young, moist lips probing his. True to young girl fashion, she responded strongly, then broke it quickly with the clumsiness of inexperience, and tried her best not to grin. Turning, she opened the door into the large outer room of the royal post. Finding no one on duty, but fearful of discovery at any moment, Calron hurried her to the outside door. After hanging the keys in their proper place, she took a brief look outside and then gestured for him to follow her. Trusting her judgment implicitly and knowing she would not betray the man with whom she had shared a kiss, the mage tentatively shadowed her every step, mindful of sharp pebbles and sticks, as she led them on a carefully winding path down shadowed alleys and between houses. Hopetown was placid under night's cloak. Neither man nor girl was noticed lurking along the streets and pathways. Once he felt more confident about his freedom, despite the chains preventing his use of magic, Calron took the lead on the pretense of taking her to the hidden magic stones. Remembering an old graveyard north of Hopetown's boundary wall, he headed that direction. Wanting to keep the long chain between his wrists as quiet as possible, he stretched it by taking her hand as he minced his way on tender feet. She walked confidently with him, obviously happy and proud to have him as her friend. He mulled over what to do next and the quickest route to his next destination, fully aware that he could not afford to have her in tow for very much longer. Against his initial feelings of hatred, he decided he owed her what he considered a favor.
Once I am discovered missing, an empty locked cell will frighten a lot of people. The finger of blame will no doubt find its way to her.
Such disgrace and humiliation will not fare well with such a young and pretty thing. Her act of mercy against the unfairness wrought against me will bring her lifelong scorn and hatred.
The most merciful gift he could offer her at this point would spare her such ruination. The lamplit streets fell behind them as he led her to a section of the boundary wall overgrown with vines. The stone pile that snaked its way around all the gardens, houses, and huts of Hopetown was only waist high, but he was forced to help her climb over with a loud rustling of leaves. Fortunately, no one bothered to investigate their dogs, and Mage and Girl were soon walking an overgrown path in a darkened forest. Calron found reason to curse Trimble again for the disenchantment chains that prevented his mage sight from helping him avoid stumbling over the odd rock or root and stubbing his toe.
We're going to where the magic stones are hidden?
Yes, Delcy.
He estimated how far the sounds of her screams might carry from the graveyard. Certainly the trees and knolls would prevent her being heard by anyone other than dogs. Just to make certain, he headed for the farthest corner of the plot of untended tombstones, noting with amusement how the young girl glanced around her with mild fright as they crushed tall, withered weeds under their feet. Knowing what he knew about various shadowed entities that lingered around the dead, he thought her superstition an astute quality rather than a childish fear. Reaching the last grave marker before the forest sprang up in their path again, he stopped, enjoying the cool patina of forming dew on the tasseled grasses between his toes.
Is this it?
Yes, Delcy, this is it.
He released her hands, then stroked at her hair.
Are you ready?
Yes.
She nodded eagerly, eyes wide in the starlight. He wanted every advantage in order that she not slip away from his grasp.
Before I show you the magic, may I kiss you again?
Really?
We are friends, aren't we?
You bet.
And with that, she lifted her face and closed her eyes again.
Perfect.
Calron caressed her cheeks and moved close. Touching his lips to hers, he slid his hands around and grabbed tight, pressing strong fingers into the soft flesh of her small neck. Her eyes flew open in shock, completely unprepared for his sudden maliciousness. She grabbed at his wrist and tugged ineffectively on the chains. Calron said nothing, his blue-white eyes burning angrily into hers. In an attempt at kicking him, she lost her balance and ended up dangling from his grasp like a hung rabbit as he lifted her and squeezed tighter and tighter. With her hands flailing feebly, she blinked bulging eyes at him once, then fell completely limp. Pleased that she had made almost no noise and satisfied that she was no longer a problem, he dropped her to the ground and glared disgustedly at her.
Why is it always a weak woman who is given power over me?
Such subservient creatures deserved nothing of the like, and yet there was the good wife who had freed him from the town pillory so many moons past, moody Tisha and her were-tiger temper, Gaewon's half-elfin wench that had guided him into Trimble's trap, and now this one.
A child, no less. But is Delcy that young?
It would ease the sting a little if she was indeed a young woman. Curious, he knelt beside her, lifted her shawl, then ripped open her loose bodice. Unable to see much in the darkness, and hampered by the chains on his wrists, he felt and squeezed her budding breast clumsily and decided she deserved to be called woman, albeit young.
All the better. Now she can rot here with the rest of the undeserving dead.
The matter done with, he stood and glanced around, trying to remember the quickest way to safety, though anywhere within reach of the marshal would only afford brief respite from the chase that would undoubtedly follow. Looking up at the stars, he judged which direction was due west, then trudged into the forest, hoping the infamous Archduke Cloone, for whom he had performed services in the past, was as good as his word. Behind him, already forgotten, he left the strangled Delcy crumpled and disheveled next to the last deteriorating grave marker. Diversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 16 are performed by Brenda Louise Thompson, Kevin Norris, Darcy Aridell, Richard Hammer, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of the delightful Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Sarah Chapman, Florian Serral of Tiny Music, Chris Haig, Francesco D'Andrea, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under LibreLibre Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.